Good morning again. If you're just tuning in, my name is Sam McLaughlin, and I'm the senior pastor here, and we're so glad you're here to worship with us. Today is the last Sunday of our July sermon series called Linger Longer. We've been talking about these busy lives that we lead, maybe with work or children or grandchildren or volunteer efforts or doctor's visits, and how it can be so difficult to slow down and really savor the present moment that we're in. We've talked about what it might look like to linger at the table, to taste our food, to have good conversation with the person across from us. We've talked about what it might even look like to linger in pain, to not numb ourselves, but allow ourselves to feel that gamut of emotions. We talked about creating and crafting time to let our hearts catch up to themselves. Last week, Rachel talked about lingering in joy, this story of Jesus turning water into wine at the very beginning of John's gospel. She quoted an author who said that if you're waiting on fireworks and perfection to experience joy, you'll be waiting for a long time. That we should be people who are easily delightable. So I hope that you have felt that way this week, that you have laughed with those who laugh. Today, we're looking at Psalm 46 as we talk about how to linger in stillness. This psalm is known as a song of confidence, a song of trust in God. As you see, it opens with this threefold description of God's nature. God is refuge, God is strength, and God is help. That word refuge is important. It's used in Psalms 1 through 72, 25 times as a descriptor for God. And so we know that God is this place that we can go to. Today we sang the hymn, A Mighty Fortress Is Our God. And many of you know that was written by Martin Luther, who looked at Psalm 46 and said, this is a beautiful song that we should sing together. Those first two stanzas that we said, a mighty fortress is our God, a bulwark, a defensive wall, never failing, our helper he amid the flood of mortal ills prevailing. Now, you heard me talk to the children about forts or fortresses, and I think that's a helpful image for us. Maybe like me, you grew up building forts. Back in the 90s in Alabama, we used anything that we had. My siblings and I started by building forts in our basement. That's because it was this low light area. So like the kids, we would take pillows and covers and cast them over couches and create these dark, safe tunnels to work through. It was like a sheltered castle. And kids in the neighborhood would come as we chased each other through the tunnels and made up games. My siblings and I also had a natural fortress in the front of our house. As you looked at our home, there was a brick staircase that led right up to the door. And to the right of that was this huge green bush. And like four people could fit in this bush at one time. And so, of course, we would take out our pocket knives and carve into the branch and brand the fort as our own. We would hide there in the middle of hide and seek, or the ghost comes out at midnight. I don't know if kids know that game these days. The ghost comes out at midnight. We would hide in this bush. We would spy on our across the street neighbors, two boys that were our rivals. Like, we loved them half the time and we hated them the other half of the time. When my siblings and I moved to another house, my mom's friend Greg built us a tree house. And so were these four wooden slats that we would climb as we shimmied through that square of a hole to get on the platform where we could sit or stand or throw pine cones at people. Beneath us was the trampoline. And so the biggest dare was always, who was going to jump out and see if they could land on the trampoline? I'm just kidding. We didn't do that. Nobody got hurt. So perhaps like me, these are some of the images that come to mind for you, and that perhaps we can say that God is like a sheltered castle, that God is like a nature-made fort, a hedge of protection, that God is like that tree house high above the ground. Even now, in adulthood, we need our fortresses. We need those places that we go to be still with God, to be reminded that God alone is our refuge, our strength, our ever-present help in a time of trouble. I love that the Message version of this psalm starts this way: God is a safe place to hide. Don't we feel that there are times still that we need a safe place to hide? There's a book that I was given about 10 years ago that I've held on to, one that I continue to come back to. It's called Sabbath: Finding Rest, Renewal, and Delight in Your Busy Life. It's written by a man named Wayne Mueller, who was influenced by Henry Nouwen. In his book, very early in the book, he contends that life in America, a successful life in America, has become a violent enterprise. He says that we make war on our own bodies when we push them beyond their limits, that we make war on our children when we cannot find enough time to be with them when they are hurt or afraid and need our company, that we make war on our spirit when we are too preoccupied to listen to the quiet voices that seek to nourish and refresh us. We make war on our communities when we fearfully protect our own stuff and don't feel safe enough to be kind and generous. That we even make war on the earth when we cannot take the time to slip off our shoes and plant our feet in the dirt and allow it to bless us. Now, in this series, we've talked about downshifting. We've talked about not sacrificing our loved ones to the tick-tock of the clock. And so you may hear violence and you may hear war and say, you know what, that's a little too harsh, that's too far. But think about it. We feel tattered and torn in body, mind, and spirit when we push ourselves to sickness or exhaustion. Don't you feel sometimes that desire of your children for your attention when your face is in your phone and you're only half present to them? Or the times that something dings and you look at your work email and you take out the stress of what you've read on the people around you? Don't you feel that fear sometimes to hoard your resources as the world talks about scarcity? Don't you see the impact our doubled life expectancy has had on the planet? Don't you look out at the violence of the world and want a safe place to hide? You know, I have to honestly admit to you, in the last week, I have been overwhelmed by the violence in my own world. Last week, we had the news of the death of a fellow clergywoman trying to prevent a carjacking in her driveway and was killed by a 15-year-old trying to steal her car. This child who took a life and ruined his own. Still, when I hear these stories, I mean, that one's personal, but it takes me back to the deaths of the elementary school children, to the premeditated deaths of people in Buffalo by an avowed racist. For the last 4 weeks, I've been hosting conversation circles, just a safe space for women to talk about how they feel in this overturning of Roe versus Wade. I'm only sharing with you what I've heard, and that is some fear, it's some emotion, it's some wondering what choices will look like medically. I don't think any of us have to go longer than 30 minutes of watching the news and not feel that sense of overwhelming. It would be easy to get swallowed up in a sense of hopelessness and powerlessness in whatever looks violent to you. But when we return to our scripture today, we find a breath in the midst of our grief and fear. We find a promise. Verse 9 says, "Our God is the one who makes wars cease to the ends of the earth. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear, and he turns the shields with fire. God is the place we run to make the wars in our minds cease. He breaks the weapons of destructions and shatters the spears that threaten to undo us. He puts a stop to the chaos that blazes through our world. In fact, if you take a closer look at verses 2 and 3, this is what it says. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth gives way and the mountains fall into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam and the mountains quake with their surging. Now, on the surface, this may sound like the catastrophe of an earthquake and a hurricane happening at the same time. That would be bad. But this passage is talking about more than that. Because according to the ancient Near Eastern view of the universe, the mountains were both the foundation that anchored dry land in the midst of watery chaos and the pillars that held up the sky. And so the worst thing that could have happened would have been for the mountains to shake or tremble, because the earth would be threatened below by the water and above by the skies falling. So this psalm is saying, even in this degree of trouble, even when the world is falling apart, even when your world is falling apart, God is a refuge. God is a fortress, the safe place that offers us respite from violence, the place where true security is found. Now, this is not a place that we can live, but it is a place that we should frequently visit. It is where we find the antidote to our problems, the elixir to our ailments. It is the place where we recharge and refocus and replenish in order to get back out into the world and sow love where there is hatred and peace where there is discord. And it is only with this understanding that we can grasp the weight of verse 10. Be still and know that I am God. A commentary I read this week said that be still is actually not even the real intent of this verse, that it should be written something like, stop, throw down your weapons, step out of the traffic, take a long, loving look at me, your high God, above the politics, above everything. And so a piece of this is that in the stillness, in the ceasing to be sucked into the worry and the violence of this world, we are reminded that we are not sovereign, that there is someone more powerful than I, that the stillness reminds us we are not God. Everything is not up to us. Years ago, I heard a spiritual director say that refusing to stop is prideful. And it took me a while to really understand what she meant by that. But she meant that some of us tend to make ourselves more important than we really are, thinking that we have to be present, we have to be in control, that there's no way the world will continue to spin if we do not keep going. Some of us feel that external pressure to always be available. Some of us think stopping and slowing down is weakness, that we will never get ahead or stay ahead if we find rest or renewal or delight in life. But God taught us this rhythm of sacred stopping. God created a natural world that must lie fallow in winter in order to bud in spring. God and God's self showed us what it's looked like to stop and rest, and reiterated throughout the corpus of Scripture the necessity of enough for today. During my last summer of divinity school in 2016, I worked as a chaplain at an Episcopal camp. Some of you have been in Episcopal communities, and you know how important prayers are, Compline, night prayers. And so I remember vividly one night, this was a camp with high school students, that we were in All Saints Chapel in Suwanee, Tennessee. Many of you have been there before and you've seen this beautiful cathedral looking of a place. Well, we were back where I believe the choir would normally sit. brown pews that faced one another, and they were dimly lit by what looked like hanging lanterns on the pews. And at the end of the night, when it was dark and we were all getting ready to go have rest, we joined together and sang this prayer. Lord, it is night. The night is for stillness. Let us be still in the presence of God. It is night after a long day. What has been done, and what has not been done. Let it be. Now, I keep that prayer beside my bed, and I pull it out on those nights that maybe like you also feel that crushing weight of responsibility to be everything to everyone. And so today, church, part of the good news is that you are not God. Everything is not up to you. You do not have to carry the weight of the world on your shoulders. You do not even have to earn rest. It is innate in your human being. The last thing that Wayne Mueller says is that if we do not rest, we lose our way. We miss the compass points that show us where to go. We miss the quiet that gives us wisdom. See, it's only in the stillness where we are not caught up and tossed to and fro by our schedules or the ills and dangers of the world that we can truly hear God. There in the stillness, God offers us direction. If you want an answer to your prayers, be still. In the stillness, God offers us wisdom, better words, more thoughtful responses than our knee-jerk reactions. God offers us discernment. God joins us in hearing the longing of our hearts and sets before us the path to reach them. God offers us, again, a plan for action, a way to re-engage the violence of the world that breaks our heart, to have the courage to not go numb, and to show up and speak up and be the change we wish to see. So as we close this series, I want to offer to you one more practice, a way for you to get back to center when you need refuge and rest and healing. I invite you now to close your eyes, to be still. Throw down your weapons, step out of the traffic, take a deep breath, and listen. Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am. Be still and know that I. Be still and know that. Be still and know. Be still and. Be still.